Hello and welcome to The Entrepreneurs on Monocle Radio, the show all about inspiring people, innovative companies and fresh ideas in global business. Today's programme is all about soft power and even softer skin. First, we'll meet the founder of a smart skincare line that's made to ensure your daily routine is a genuinely joyous experience.
You should find joy in the things that you do because then you're more likely to do them. You know, I can tell you this is your three-step routine, but if it's not joyful for you, you're not likely to want to continue it. And, you know, the consistency is really the key.
Then we'll switch gears and head to Seattle to hear about Norway's international business delegation efforts and how the country's leveraging its soft power assets to promote brand Norway abroad.
What we try to do here whenever we go somewhere is to position Norway as a superpower in the green and digital space. We are a world leader in electric cars, world leader in electrifying maritime transportation. We are very digitally advanced, and of course it helps a lot that someone like the Crown Prince engages in that conversation.
This is The Entrepreneurs with me, Tom Edwards. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs. Dr. Mariam Zamani is a world-leading oculoplastic surgeon with a special interest in facial aesthetics. She's also the founder of high-performance skincare line MZ Skin. Mariam stopped by Midori House to talk about the brand, her holistic approach, and the importance of a consistent skincare routine. She began by telling me about the start of her entrepreneurial journey and exactly what it is that an oculoplastic surgeon does.
I am American board certified ophthalmologist, which means that I focus around the eye. I, as you can tell from my American accent, was raised in the U.S. I'm Iranian originally, but I was raised there and I did all my schooling there, college, med school, residency. I even started working there, did my board certification there. Fell in love with someone who lives in London, and, you know, as they say, the rest is history, except for that it's not, because it's very difficult to work in the UK having your credentials from the United States. So when I moved here, I think I was very fortunate. I met a wonderful woman who was very instrumental in helping me get on the specialist registrar. And while that was happening, I did two fellowships in oculoplastic and reconstructive surgery, which means that the surgical aspect of what I do is always faced on the outside, so nothing inside the eyeball anymore. And it was very focused on reconstructive and cosmetic procedures around the eyes. Think, you know, baggy eyelids, heavy upper eyelid skin, a droopy eyelid, a droopy brow. I've done mid facelifts and some lower ones. And during that time, I learned a little bit about hyaluronic acid. So in the US, that was relatively new. It was not something that I was learning in my training. But when I came here, we were using it in the NHS for patients who had undergone so many different kinds of surgeries. And they were like, oh my God, I don't want to have another surgery. What can I do instead? So we started using these, we call them HA fillers, dermal fillers. And you could do a lot of good without having someone go into surgery. So I started doing some research and I was like, that's so cool. You can do so much before you need to operate. And so I thought, I need to do a little bit of dermatology. So I then literally, the minute I found out that I was accepted on the specialist registrar here with the GMC, I embarked on a year course doing dermatology with Cardiff University. I'm not a dermatologist, but it was more for my own learning on all the different lasers and technologies that were out there that I could then use in combination. And so after I had my two babies and I started my practice, I really wanted that to be the focus. I wanted it to be all encompassing. So from a personal point of view, it was super interesting, but I really wanted to give that holistic approach because it's not that surgery is the end all for every single person. There's so much you can do. And also at different ages, at different stages and different levels of the skin, you can help affect and improve what you have.
Well, that's, I guess, the medical background. But how did you actually get started making skincare products?
Skincare just kind of happened. I say it's my third child because, my daughter was a couple of years old. I think she was three when I started working on it. And it was really meant for me. After I had my kids, I had terrible pigmentation. I loved skincare my whole life. My mother gave me my first product, I think, when I was like 12 or 13. And all through my 20s, skincare was my ritual. It was my form of active meditation. So I would study, I'd go to the gym, go out, whatever I did, the end of the night was always the same. I'd come home, wash my face, put on some nice skincare, t-shirt and boxers, and go to bed. That set me up for success in terms of having a good night's sleep. And so I think unknowingly, that was my ritual. You know, that was my thing that I did. And I was spending a ton of money on it, but it made me feel good. And, you know, there's an important aspect to that. Skincare should have joy and purpose, in my opinion. And so what happened was that I had this melasma and I went to have it treated, knowing what I needed to do. And I started using doctor-led skincare brands. And the ones I tried, they were all made by men. They all looked very androgynous. They looked clinical. They felt clinical, which was the worst part, because that wonderful luxury experience, that sensory experience that I loved and associated with a little bit of self-care and self-time, I lost that joy. And I stopped using it. I became the non-compliant patient. And I went back to my old lovely products. And I started working with a formulator to make the creams that I would need. And my husband was like, well, why don't you like sell them at your office too? And I was like, okay, why not? And it just so happened that I had met the junior buyer at Harrods. And she said, I love your idea, my ethos, which is to reveal, enhance, protect the skin. And she said, we have one doctor-led female brand. The others are all made by men. Everything is made by estheticians and nurses and facialists. But we don't have really any female-led doctor brands. And I want you to launch in 6 months. I was like, ah! I didn't have anything. Like when I say I had nothing, I had my formulations and that was sort of it. And so I worked really tirelessly, really not knowing what I was embarking on. I say often that I was the accidental entrepreneur. Probably blinders were ignorance is bliss in some situations, because I had no idea where it was going to take me. And that's the journey. You know, it's been a journey. And perhaps had I not moved to the UK and had to do these fellowships, and, you know, my whole career would have been very different. I'm sure I would have been equally satisfied, but it's just interesting. I do think it is indeed a journey.
Well, yeah, and the role of serendipity and luck and whatever it is, yes, you want to call it, sliding doors moments and all the rest of it. It's funny, Mariam, there's a whole bunch of things in there which actually I find are typical of the conversations I have with entrepreneurs. One is how liberating total ignorance can be.
Yes.
So many people say, God, if I knew, I never would have got started. That's one. I think this idea of coming back to something that's always been a passion, that often crops up in conversations, whether it's, you know, what that routine was when you were a kid and then as a young adult and so forth, and sort of how those things stay with you. Again, those kinds of experiences are common. What definitely is uncommon, and I just wanted to kind of go back a little bit to what you started by talking about, was this idea of bringing a really holistic approach. Now, I think if we talk about holistic medicine, that goes in a different direction. But this idea of getting a deep knowledge and a mastery of different things, that is quite unusual, isn't it? You even said from being inside the eye to,
yes,
outside the eye, then talking about skin, talking about wellness products and a rigor around that. That strikes me as unusual to draw off all of those different influences. Do you think that, is that a problem in medicine?
I do.
It's too directional. It's clearly too still male-led. And you've struck some really key blows in that direction, which is great. But is there a problem with that unidirectional approach to things, or
it's
just being too limited? I don't know.
You know, when I first started, I said one of the reasons I chose eyes is that I wanted to be a specialist in one area. I really wanted to have the master in one skill. And then I was enlightened when I came here. So I feel like I got to see different aspects. And again, that's where, you know, where whether it's serendipity or the opportunity that arose from what I was experiencing, I just realized that it's not one answer, and that, yes, I can obviously go in and surgically correct something, but I can prevent a lot of things from happening. And then, you know, there are things you can do in your 20s and 30s that can prolong, for instance, even aesthetic work that you might want to do later on, because you're just giving yourself the best opportunity to live and look your best for longer. And so I also think I was always interested in that. So, you know, for instance, exercise has been another pillar in my life from a very young age. And that idea of sleep and doing, the idea is always to live and feel and look your best at every age. And so you can accomplish that. It doesn't matter if you're 50 and you're starting, you're 70 and you're starting, or you're 20 and you're starting. You know, obviously, the more youthful you are, the better it is, you know, in terms of being able to hold off on certain things. But I do think that that is unusual. And I think, unfortunately, there's just so much you need to learn in medical school, for instance, that you can't possibly you know, you have to have an interest in it because there's so many different things that you might want to look into. So, you know what? Maybe I could have gone into nutrition and that would have been another dive, you know, nutritional aspect in terms of maintaining your the best being of your body and your skin and your aesthetic. That's a whole like humongous complex out there now. And also we weren't combining things so much back then. You know, everything was very compartmentalized. It's like, oh, you know, you have a problem with your stomach, you go to the GI doctor. You know, you have a problem with your skin, you go to the dermatologist. You have something with your heart, it's the cardiologist. It was less. And then, you know, especially in the U.S., where everything is very specialized in that sort of sense. At least in Europe, you have these wonderful GPs who really bring everything together and are kind of like the PA for your medical system, which is really fabulous. You don't have that as much in America. So what you do is you don't feel well, you go to the specialist, you know. And so I think that's a really interesting thing that you picked up on. And I do think there's a push to go towards that direction. And I hope that it will continue. But if I had to do it all over again, oh my God, I would do like a fellowship in Asia and I would look at holistic medicines and approaches. I would look into for sure nutrition and gut health, which I think will play more and more of an important role, not only for what I do in beauty, but also for, you know, health in general and well-being, neurological. Now, I mean, we all want to live our best for as long as possible and that, and to look our best doing it. So I think that will only become more and more prevalent with time.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's that funny thing. I think sometimes you fall into the trap of imagining that science has told us everything we need to know. But you're right. If you think about, I've been reading all the stuff about microbiome.
Yes.
And you realize it's like, oh, that's neurological health. And,
yes.
And, you know, lung health and all the rest of it. And it's all joined together. And we're only really scratching the surface in some of these areas. This prompts me to ask another question, Mariam. So your approach then, if we talk about, say, MZ Skin, you obviously have a scientific approach, correct?
Yes.
Or a medical approach, I suppose. But is it important, and is what makes it work, that also you have a well-being approach and something that's more empathic, it's a bit more instinctive, it's a bit more human, it's emotional component to it? Because these are also things which we maybe don't talk about enough.
No.
If we're talking about living well, living healthily. Is that another skill to draw those strands together?
I do. I mean, for me, so my line is based on that three-pillar prospect of reveal, enhance, protect. So you reveal gorgeous, clean skin. So it's very receptive. It's the foundation for what you're going to place on top. Then you use amazing ingredients to help bolster whatever you need from your skin, whether it's improving the skin barrier, whether it's decreasing pigmentation, decreasing redness, decreasing blemishes, or just boosting collagen and elastin. And then you need to protect your skin from all the environmental stressors and inherent stressors that we have in our life, as well as things that are out of your control. So that's a three-step philosophy. But like I said, I think skincare should be joy with purpose. And I think that if you can make your skincare routine, even a 2-minute routine where you are giving yourself self-love, you are touching your face, you're washing your face. That means you can give a little bit of lymphatic drainage to your face. The actual touch of your fingers on your skin, there are releases chemically that happen to release stress. It can help with lymphatic drainage. It can bring circulation into that area, help remove some of the toxins, help you bring oxygen and nutrients to the skin, and actually make your skincare work better for you. So all of that can happen in literally 2 minutes. And then if you have good product that you're putting on top, well, then you're not only getting the benefits of the purpose, but you're also getting the joy. So I do think that's really important that you should have joy. You should find joy in the things that you do because then you're more likely to do them. You know, I can tell you this is your 3-step routine, but if it's not joyful for you, you're not likely to want to continue it. The consistency is really the key.
Let me ask you then about your, it feels like it's one of those things where there is no typical consumer, but do you have to think a little bit about who your typical consumer might be, whether that's with the products or clients who come to see you to work with you? Is there a kind of an abstract notion of what that person is?
First person's me. So that's how it started. So I was troubled by pigmentation. So in my thought philosophy, we're all going to age. It's a privilege to age. We will all have fine lines and wrinkles. We will have some skin sagging. But if your skin is clear, and that means from blemishes, from redness, from pigmentation, whatever it is, you will always look more youthful, more bright, and more receptive to other people. And that energy will also come back to you. And so when I first started, my plight was really for pigmentation. And so for me, it was finding ingredients that were going to give me even skin tone. And so that has been the cornerstone of pretty much everything that I've done. I'm never going to have like 25 steps, but I'm going to have good products that work synergistically well together to really give you that clear skin. And so, as I said, when I first started it, I was thinking of it for me. But I'm very similar to the patients that I see. And so, you know, no one's trying to look 20 years younger. They just want to look the best they can for their age. So when they look in the mirror, they recognize the person, the energy with the face that they have and the skin that they have. And so, yes, I absolutely look at my patients, men and women, and we want the same things. And I think it's really important also to educate people, because what your skin might need today is going to be different than your skin on a beach in the Mediterranean on a sunny summer day that might be really humid. And so you might actually need to mix up your skincare routine. And you should be okay with being playful, and you should be receptive and understand your skin too. So just like if you have a tummy ache, you might not eat too much because you're like, oh, maybe I should just take it easy. The same thing happens with your skin. I think you need to look for clues from what you're doing too, so that you know what's best. I always think we know a little bit more than other people do about ourselves. And so if you can tune into that reception, I think that's really important too. Mm.
Well, that idea of it's always reassuring, I think, when experts talk about the importance of people trusting their intuition, and actually they may have some of the answers or already not all of them. Is it possible that as you're just going about your daily business that you've got to do that thing? Do you kind of diagnosing people or looking at things?
No, I don't do that.
You must try not to, but I just, because, and obviously part of me is thinking every time you say blemish, I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, no.
I'm feeling a bit.
You have very clear skin,
withered,
by the way.
A little bit withered and atrophied today, but can you resist doing that a little bit? Do you ever find you want to just go over and say to somebody, like, oh, you know what, you should try?
No, you know what? I never do that, because actually, when people come into my office, I always ask them about their medical history, but the first thing I ask them is I say, what brings you here? And people say, well, I'm just here. Some people say, well, I'm just here because I want to know what you would do to me. And I say, that's not how I work. Because I'll give you an example. My grandmother had this beautiful mole on her cheek. And it was elevated and fleshy. And some people might have thought, like, it was skin colored. But I played with it. And I loved it. And I would come and give my grandma a kiss on the cheek for where that little mole was. Someone else might think that that is a really ugly mole. And if she came into my office and she said, what would you do? And I said, oh, I would take away that mole. And she's like, oh, my God, but my granddaughter loves that mole. She would never get it out of her mind that I thought that she should remove it. And who am I? I'm just some woman that she's come in to see for something. And I'm not going to see her every single day when she looks in the mirror or when her granddaughter comes over and looks at her in the face. So I absolutely always listen to my patient first. Sometimes they might think it's the wrong thing. So they might come in and say, I'm here for, I don't know, an injectable like Botox or fillers. But in actuality, they have a lot of sun damage from pigmentation. And that's the cause of why they feel they look tired. So if I can educate them on what that is, I might be able to steer the direction of what I might do or what the treatment might be. But I try not to look at people. And there are sometimes, you know, if I see something that I think is bad, I will always tell someone. So if I see someone and I see like a blemish that looks not so great, I might say, you know what, you might want to come in and have that checked out. And I do that because I am a doctor first and foremost. And so if I can help someone in any sort of way, I will. But I'm never going to be like, oh my God, your eyelids are down to the ground and you just need an eye lift. No, I'm never going to say that. It should always be about doing the best to be the best version of yourself, not someone different.
That was Dr. Mariam Zamani, and you can learn more about the brand by heading to mzskin.com. Do be sure to look out for the recently launched calming range of products for sensitive and redness-prone skin. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs. Companies the world over are eager to do business on the US West Coast. If the state of California were an independent country, remember, it would be the world's fifth largest economy. Silicon Valley capitalists invest in startups to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars per year. Microsoft and Apple duke it out for bragging rights as the world's most valuable company, with market caps hovering around $3 trillion. But when you come from a small nation, how do you attract the attention of such titans? Well, Team Norway thinks it just might have a secret weapon. Monocle's Seattle correspondent Gregory Scruggs joined a recent business delegation to find out more.
So it's a pleasure and a privilege to have you here, and it's also my great pleasure and great honor to welcome Your Royal Highness Crown Prince Håkon to the stage. Crown Prince.
We have very much been looking forward to coming to Seattle and to highlight many of the possibilities of cooperation between companies here, institutions here, and counterparts in Norway. Today's conference is focused on the green transition and the ocean industries. Norwegians have been shipbuilders and seafarers since the Viking Age. We have maintained our expertise not just by staying true to tradition, but also by constantly thinking along new lines, adopting to change and seeking broad cooperation. The spirit of innovation is alive and well, and is more crucial than ever as the maritime industries take steps to achieve the green transition.
A royal visit is a guaranteed way to attract attention when traveling abroad. And if you are a Norwegian delegation, then your nation's crown prince is among your top soft power assets. The 50-year-old heir apparent to the Norwegian throne is a talented diplomat with special ties to the region. For starters, he earned his bachelor degree from the University of California, Berkeley. And when he traveled north from the San Francisco Bay Area to Seattle, he was met by a traditional Norwegian greeting party. After all, the city was largely settled by Nordic immigrants and hosts the world's largest celebration outside of Norway of the country's Constitution Day, known as 17 Mai or 17th May. That historical connection, coupled with Washington State's robust technology and maritime sectors, made Seattle an obvious stop. To find out how Team Norway lands valuable face time with top executives and elected officials, I tracked down the delegation's organizer on a busy morning at the National Nordic Museum.
I'm Håkon Haugli. I'm the CEO of Innovation Norway, which is a state-owned company providing services to Norwegian businesses. So we do everything from trade promotion. So we are now in Seattle on a trade promotion activity. We also provide financing, loans and grants to entrepreneurs and companies undertaking innovative work or establishing a new company. And we also do tourist promotion. So Visit Norway is part of our portfolio. So it's a pretty broad portfolio. For a small country like Norway, it makes sense to bundle tasks together.
Now, we just heard from His Royal Highness Crown Prince Håkon introducing the event, today's mission to Seattle. What is the importance of having a figure with such star power like His Royal Highness in opening doors when you are organizing these trade missions?
Yeah, the key phrase there is opening doors. He's a very effective magnet for the counterparts on when we visit a country. He goes on quite a few of these missions. Last year we were in Germany, and the year before we were in London, and we see that it gives us results. The companies, and we just came from San Francisco, contracts were signed, a lot of hands were shaken, and investments were announced, investments from Californian venture capitalists into Norwegian startup companies. So it gives an immediate effect, but in the long term, it also provides us with a platform to work from, because those connections can be built on through the coming months and years. And we know this recipe works because we see it. And the Crown Prince is somebody that people would like to meet. So we get a higher level attention from companies than we would normally or otherwise do. And we get to visit some of the world's leading companies, as we will here in Seattle as well. We'll go to Microsoft and Amazon, and the Crown Prince will lead delegations there. And we get top management attention, which of course is of great importance for our companies, our customers. What we try to do here whenever we go somewhere is to position Norway as a superpower in the green and digital space. We are a world leader in electric cars, world leader in electrifying maritime transportation. We are very digitally advanced, and that provides us with some bridges that we can build. And of course, it helps a lot that both our government ministers, but also someone like the Crown Prince engages in that conversation.
to understand how a crown prince who opens doors can generate tangible business opportunities for Norwegian entrepreneurs, I caught up with one of the delegates, hoping to land a deal.
So my name is Siv Remevangen, and I'm the managing director at a company called Norwegian Electric System. And we are a maritime supplier and a system integrator providing energy power, automation, and navigation system for vessels. We find this trade mission or trip to be very interesting because there are so many things going on now outside of Norway, and we see that both California and Seattle, or state of Washington, have so many similarities with Norway and the West Coast in particular. And our company has been involved in the electrification of the ferries along our Norwegian coast since, I think, 2017. We have delivered system for 50 to 60 vessels, 30 charging stations. And now we see that both California and the state of Washington are really exploring how they can also electrify their fleet. So the purpose of this trip is basically to get more insight on where they are, what they are interested in, and to see if there can be mutual collaboration opportunities.
Is this your first attempt at doing business here in the United States?
Unfortunately, it is not. As a company, we tried a few years back. There was a big tender with Washington State Ferry, and we were a part of that try. But because we didn't have, you know, feet on the ground and a local presence, we were unable to come in as number one. We came in as number two.
So here we are a few years later, and you're giving it another shot. But this time, as part of a team, Innovation Norway brings a whole raft of companies together. You're not just going it alone. Are you more confident the second go around because you have the backing of Innovation Norway?
Absolutely. I mean, we have gained so much insight of the opportunities here. They've opened the doors, and we're having multiple meetings with local companies after this summit. So for us, this is just the first step.
My thanks to Gregory Scruggs for that report. If you'd like to learn more, then Google Innovation Norway. Check out innovationnorge.no or find links on the Visit Norway website. And that's all for this episode of the programme. We'll be back at the same time next week. Do look out for Eureka, available every Friday. The Entrepreneurs was produced by Laura Kramer, with mixing and editing by Tamsin Howard. Don't forget to subscribe to Monocle Magazine to read more about better businesses every month. You can listen again and find out more about this programme at monocle.com, or follow us and catch up with the archive via your preferred podcast platform. To contact the Entrepreneurs team, email Laura. She's on lrk@monocle.com. I'm Tom Edwards. Goodbye, and thanks for listening to The Entrepreneurs.